With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hi, Paul Dennett here. Just letting you know that Cricket Unfiltered is now on Patreon. If you are a fan of our show and would like to support us with a few dollars each month, go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/cricketunfiltered, or click the link in the show notes on your podcast app.
Menas here, our Patreon supporters will also get some pretty cool bonus content. Paul will be doing a series of cricket history podcasts.
And Menas will be doing long-form interviews with leading cricket personalities.
All of these shows, plus other bonus features, will be available exclusively to our Patreon supporters.
The first bonus episodes are available now. Menas has just done a superb interview with a very candid Shane Watson.
And Paul has put a history special together on how cricket was covered on Australian television before the World Series cricket revolution.
So if you want some great extra content, or if you just love the show and would like to help support us financially, please go to patreon.com/cricketunfiltered. Now, on with today's show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to AFL Unfiltered. I'm your host, Andrew Mensel. No, I'm sorry, Jaleesa and Paul, welcome, but I'm a convert. I've been watching Making Their Mark on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
this is not a sponsored post, but I'm an AFL fan now. I want to talk about the Swans' big win on the weekend over the Lions.
You'll say anything if someone will pay you.
I'm not being paid for this post. I am indoctrinated into the AFL world. Welcome, Paul. How are you?
Good. And Jaleesa, I'd like to clarify that I will say anything if anyone will pay me. So if anyone wants to pay me for anything, if you want me to be an AFL fan, I will.
I too would like to clarify that.
How are you, Jaleesa?
Paul and I are up for sale.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm really well.
Yeah, no, I love the behind-the-scenes stuff from the AFL, and you could never get that in an NRL context, could
Why?
You? Well, can you imagine the stuff they'd be filming?
What do you
All
mean?
The meatheads in the dressing room slamming each other and stuff.
I think there's a whole world of NRL that you don't actually know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm an AFL convert, so in this episode,
I can't wait for 10 years' time when you're an NRL convert and we can remind you of all this.
Can you just quickly name the 18 clubs, Minas?
Okay. I don't know. Big Swans fan, though. Big Swans fan.
There's a lot of birds, so you just have to remember a lot of birds.
Magpies. Collingwood.
Yeah, very good.
Ah, yes, one out of
Crows.
The Crows. Adelaide. See, I'm doing well. The Cats. Geelong.
Okay. All right. We don't have to do all that either.
West Coast.
Eagles.
Very good.
Fremantle. Okay. Dockers.
And we've lost everyone.
Okay. Hello, listeners. It's the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. No, we're not switching to a winter AFL podcast or an NRL podcast. We are going to wrap up all the cricket news. We've got lots of listener questions, and then we're going to bring it on home with our special guest, Shane Watson. But let's start off. We've got a couple of questions from our listeners. The first one was Martin Lawrence from Victoria, who surprisingly wants us to talk about New South Wales being bowled out for 32 against Tasmania. And Jack Taylor said, can we get a Mad Menace? Well, I've got to say, I was ropeable when New South Wales were bowled out for 32 on the weekend against Tasmania. Very, very disappointing. Paul, you and I have seen a lot of New South Wales cricket in the last few years, but that is the lowest ever score. Terrible.
Yeah, and amazing how quick it was. And it's one of those ones where every ball just seemed to, you know, there was one LBW that I thought was a bit curious. I thought that maybe Sanger was a little bit unlucky. I thought he got outside the line of off. But, yeah, Jackson Bird, wonderful bowler. Feel a bit sorry for him because his last test match was that horrible wicket at the MCG in 2017-18. He'd been in the squad, finally got in the match, and then it was that game that Alistair Cook got the double century on the flattest pitch of all time, and that's the last test match that he's ever played. So really good bowler. So pleased for him. Got his top score as well. So what a day for Jackson Bird.
What about the records that fell, Paul? You love your stats. I mean, run us through a few.
Well, I mean, where can
you start? Give us some context for this disgraceful performance.
Well, as you've correctly put here, it's their previous lowest Sheffield Shield score was 53. But they've broken a record that predates the Sheffield Shield. I mean, that's just started yesterday, 1892-93. they have broken their lowest ever score, which they set in 1868-69. That predates the Sheffield Shield. It predates the SCG. The game was at the Domain. It predates WG Grace growing a beard. If you ever see really young photos of him, he was 20 then. And he had no beard. Very handsome man in his younger days. It was only New South Wales's 12th ever game.
How can we do this? 32!
And here's how Sydney Morning Herald began their article back then. The intercolonial match for the season 1868-69 commenced yesterday in the Domain under favourable circumstances. I include that quote because they mention it's the intercolonial match for the season. New South Wales only played one game that season, better than the season before where they played none. The crowd on the first day, 10,000, that was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
And the paper wasn't shocked because Victoria had batted first and only made 61. New South Wales then got 37, Victoria 149, and New South Wales finished with 95. So Victoria won by 78 runs. And one last thing, that could get reported pretty much instantaneously down to Victoria because there was an overland telegraph, but it had only been in for 10 years. So 10 years before that, if the game had been on, the only way that Victorians would have found out the score was when the boat came back with the newspapers from New South Wales. That's how far back into the past we are delving.
I bet this current team wishes that situation was
I think,
current.
This game, though, it really shows, well, I guess New South Wales side of things, really shows how it's such a mental game sometimes because when the wickets start falling and you just can't get into any sort of rhythm and mentally you've just already lost.
Oh, they've got the collapsing thing happening this year in New South Wales. Bowled out for 64 against Tasmania before the Big Bash break. But, Jaleesa, you must admit, New South Wales got off very easy that it was the first weekend of the real footy last weekend because if New South Wales had been bowled out for 32 and there wasn't AFL on, it would have been front page of the newspapers leading off.
New York Times would have led with it,
exactly.
Mate.
Exactly.
I don't know if it would have been front page of the newspapers, but I take your point. I think if there hadn't been NRL and AFL on, for sure it would have got a lot more of a run. So I'm sure they're happy to be slipping under the radar at this late stage.
One little bonus is
that awful.
Tasmania have made a lower score than that. Their lowest score is 18. And the lowest score ever in first-class cricket in Australia is 15 from Victoria against the MCC in 1903-04.
I mean, you've got the stats here, and all the scores are from last century or
a long time ago. Yeah.
And there's one score, 2004-05, South Australia bowled out for 29. So they're the only ones sort of who've currently done something as bad as New South Wales. But what wounds me is that it's New South Wales. I mean, this should be not just like the best cricket state in Australia, but you know, it's one of the best in the world. And okay, a couple of players are out. Smith, Warner, Enriquez.
There were quite a few players out, yeah.
But still, 32. I mean, that is, they head should roll. They should get the guillotine and just take them off.
Well, on that front, onto my favourite topic.
Here we go, Ollie Davies.
It's time for Ollie Davies, surely.
Yes. Oh, my Lord.
Now, I know he played a poor shot the other day, although he batted really well in that game before he played that poor shot. But, I mean, you know, I'm in all seriousness, he averages 56.4 across the last two seasons in first grade for Manly, had a strike rate of 99.93. Now, if it was 99.94, then that would be guaranteed. He'd have to get in there because it's Bradman's average. But a strike rate of 100, averaging 56, that's not a player who's just a slogger. That's a player who can play. And he's only 20. And not to pick out, you know, I mean...
Not to pick out, but I'm going to.
Now, here are the players I'm going to pick out. I mean, Nick Larkin, who I've heard him on podcast. I really like Nick Larkin. He sounds like a really nice guy. But he's about to turn 31. He averages 29.05 for New South Wales. I think that you'd have to say you're going to be better off with going for a younger player. Now, I know he's an opening batsman, and he's averaging 45.63 in grade in the last 2 years. I thought I should check those stats to make sure that I am comparing apples with apples. Same thing with Jason Sanger. He's a young player, but in his 16 first-class games for New South Wales, he's only averaging 21.8. And then I felt obliged to check his first-grade stats in the last 2 years, and they completely ruined my argument. He's averaging 80.1 in the last 2 years. So I read that out grudgingly, so maybe I'm completely wrong.
Well, I think I can get behind Davies.
I don't like your Nick Larkin is about to turn 31. I thought we weren't ageist here, Paul.
No. I'm saying that... that shows he's had a decent sample size. It's not like he's
Okay, right. I
because you're also about to turn 31, aren't you?
No, I'm about to turn 27.
Okay.
Wow. Me that too. Was weird. I know. Work like
so
that.
So exciting. You're 27. Like.
So, yeah, I bring in Ollie Davies. Actually, Adam Gilchrist was interviewed by Matty White today, and he said he thinks one of the most exciting players in the country is Oliver Davies.
I haven't got a feeling like this since I've watched Gilchrist, that when you watch him play, every ball is like, what's he going to do now? You know, seeing him five sixes in a row did that. He hit six sixes in a row a few years ago in an underage comp. So, yeah, he's very exciting.
Yeah, but
I now live in the Manly area as well, so I'm kind of, I've become parochial.
You're a local.
Go yeah. See Eagles.
Well, that left the Sheffield Shield table. What are they, an AFL club? Sheffield Shield table, Queensland and New South
They're
Wales.
They're about to be if they keep playing like they are.
Yeah, exactly. Queensland are up the top of the ladder, New South Wales second. So basically, New South Wales are leading the Marsh Cup table. They're second on the Shield. You could have a team bowled out for 64 and 32, win both comps and the Big Bash, which would mean they could win everything and still put in a performance like that.
Next thing, we'll have a team bowled out for 36 beating Australia in a test series here.
That would be amazing. So that leaves Tasmania, WA and Victoria with this, especially WA and Victoria have very slim chances of making the Shield final. Now they'll need to win both their games and they'll need to hope New South Wales or Queensland don't add to their points tally. But yeah, Queensland, the favourites to host the final against a very inconsistent New South Wales. And good that Warner and Enriquez can take off the Shield to rest up for their IPL club. I think that's nice that we're doing that for the IPL clubs now.
It's very bitter of you, Menners. Very bitter.
I'm feeling bitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think... Oh, I can see where you're coming from, but I can see where they're coming from as well, and I think it's just the way of the world.
Yeah, it's a complicated season, but it does irk me. Jack wasn't wanted Mad Manners. Well, I'm mad. I can tell you, Jack, I'm mad. And finally, the March Cup. As I said, New South Wales are on top. Queensland, Tasmania in second and third. WA just got a double bonus point as we came in here, so that will rocket them up the table. But with just five games being played, New South Wales in pole position in the March Cup. So they are doing well despite the 32. We're going to take our first break and then we'll be back with the cricket headlines. You're listening to the Cricket Unfiltered podcast. Welcome back. I'm Menners. I'm with Jaleesa and Paul. And it's the headlines time, brought to you by Piccolo Podcasts. Well, the first headline is an article written by Peter Lawler for the Daily Telegraph. And he has revealed that Aaron Finch had astigmatism, which is a common vision problem caused by an error in the shape of the cornea. With astigmatism, the lens of the eye or the cornea, which is in the front surface of the eye, has an irregular curve, which causes blurry, fuzzy, or distorted vision. Not good if you're opening the batting for Australia.
And explains a lot.
I have this as well, actually. I have a minor one. Maybe, because he's going to have surgery or he's had surgery?
So he's just had laser surgery, finally, and that will correct the problem.
Imagine if I did that and suddenly it was brilliant. I'd be really regretting that I didn't do it 20 years ago.
And you know what? I've heard that that's the only thing keeping you from the Australian
I've heard
team.
That as well.
Yeah, I've heard rumours. There's word.
But just incredible that would sort of be affecting him for so long. And no wonder he was not playing very well.
I wonder how when he knew this, when he figured it out, like if he knew that whole time when he wasn't going well that he was suffering with that, or was it something that he what's going on?
Yeah, no, I think he knew because Simon Kadich was talking recently. And I think he started to know last year, but
okay.
He just couldn't take a break and get it sorted out. So, look, it also in the article they point out that Don Bradman was colourblind and somebody asked him how he saw the red ball against certain backgrounds and he responded that he'd only ever noticed its size, not its colour.
That's news to me. I've
never heard that.
Everything that I've possibly been able to get my hands on Don Bradman, including his autobiography where he talks about his eyesight, and he never mentioned the colourblindness. So I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it's news to me, and I Googled it today. I couldn't find any reference to
it. Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I was just about to Google that and go, I've never heard this before either. Yeah. So
I'm not saying it's not true, but just I'm saying interesting.
Yeah, so Paul's not 100% sure on that one. And please write in if you can fact check that. And Virat Kohli apparently wears contacts on the field, rumoured to.
I can see here there is a few sources that say he's colourblind.
Are you sure, though? Because it was referring to Bill Ponsford as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Bill Ponsford.
Oh, really?
You've got to click the article.
Oh, bullshit.
Wow.
What kind of... I don't do that.
A read?
Give me the headline and sensationalise it or nothing.
All right, the next cricket headline. The worst use of the DRS system ever by Channel 7. They will never use DRS again, I hope, because it's cost them $10 million. They were offered a $15 million discount by Cricket Australia before the summer. They declined it. They went upstairs to the DRS system and the third umpire said, look, you're only going to get a $5 million discount. So there you go.
What are you talking about? Is this anything to do with DRS?
Well, it's not real DRS. It's actually
an
arbitration committee.
My brain went to like, are they... What?
Have they introduced DRS into life?
No. Yes. Because I could really use that.
Yeah. You didn't clean up the kitchen. DRS.
DRS. No, I thought you meant that they were getting a discount on DRS, as in the cameras.
No, sorry.
What are you talking about? Anyway, sorry. Clarify that. So they what?
They went to an arbitration... They went through arbitration for the rights
discount. Oh, okay.
The
this is
discount.
When they're having all their,
And as I said, they were offered $15 million. They declined it. They went to DRS arbitration for Jaleesa. And then...
Not real.
And then they only said it was $5 million discount. So they cost themselves $10 million by going upstairs.
Yeah, right. Reports 9 and 10 were approached during the dispute. Yeah,
former work and your new work.
My new, yeah.
So you could be doing the Big Bash at 10.
We need Channel 19 so I can work for both because I miss everyone, but I want to work with everyone.
Have you finished at 9 yet?
No, I've still got 2.5 more weeks.
Okay, so you can still see Jaleesa on the news every night.
Oh, well, then you can see me at 10. Tune your channels.
That's right.
Yeah, it's sad, though, that was it Robert Craddock a couple of weeks ago saying, in his opinion, Channel 7 will never want to have cricket again once the rights expire. When you've only got 3 free-to-air networks, you haven't got much to choose from. And I know that soon it will be all streaming and a brave new world. But at the moment still, you don't want to be offending the... it doesn't sound like Cricket Australia did much wrong in the end, that if they were vindicated in the court case, then, well, maybe Channel 7's the ones that need to have a look at themselves.
Well, especially when Nine's already sort of locked up the rights to so many other things, it does leave limited options.
Channel 10 with that CBS money needs to pony up and get all the cricket.
I'd be on board with that.
That's right. All right.
That's my first job.
That's your first job. That and Shield Cricket. getting more coverage, please.
Yeah, right.
Just do that in your first meeting.
I'm just going to go in like...
Is there a cooling off period? Because wait till that's over yeah, before you run that
wait
line.
Till my 3 months. If I get fired within 3 months, you know I went too hard.
All right, the next headline, and this is from an article by Joe Barton in the Daily Telegraph, former panellist on this show. So Shane Warne has actually come on board with my prediction that the Ashes next summer could be fiercely contested. And this is what Warney said. I think this will be one of the closest Ashes series for a long time. And he's urged Australia to heed the lessons learned from their Indian failure. And this is the quote that gets me. At times through this summer, they just got scared of losing and they just went defensive rather than attack. And the Australian way is to attack. And he points out that with England coming with Archer and Anderson and Stokes as their quick bowlers, that's a dangerous lineup just there. You're not even talking about Broad and the rest. So, yeah, I'm with Warney. I think next summer Australia's in a lot of trouble.
I wouldn't go as far as to say a lot of trouble, but I agree with him that it could be a really hotly contested series. And I also agree that Australia were too defensive, specifically just in terms of batting slowly. I think that they need to put the foot down a little bit more. And when you think back to those Ashes of 2017-18, I've always said that 4-0 sounds like a thrashing. But my memory is that each game, England were in it for a long way, and it was kind of an arm wrestle that ultimately maybe 4-0 flattered Australia a little bit. If England had had a little bit more luck, maybe it could have been closer. So it needs to be closer. We've talked before on this panel that you exclude 2010-11, England's record in Australia in the last living memory, or not quite living memory, but last 20 or 30 years is deplorable. So
they haven't won a test in Australia since that tour.
And they didn't win one in the tour before that, and the tour before that they won one. So this century, you take out 2010-11, England's record is just gargantuanly terrible. So the Ashes needs a really close contest. It would be great to have one.
Are you nervous, Jaleesa, like Warney?
I'm probably not as nervous as Warney is, but I agree, reflecting on the way Australia played against India, we certainly can't take the same kind of tactics in, and I don't think they would either because they were torn apart because of it.
I just don't know whether Australia has that ability now to sort of fight back. It seems like as soon as India started to really, you know, claw their way into the series, we just got to run out of answers.
I think there'll be a lot of I think there was definitely the mentality that we were going to completely roll India, particularly with our fast bowlers that we've got. And I think it's just probably we got us gave us a bit of a shake up with you can't actually rely on the bowlers because when it's not happening, it's not happening. And you're going to have to find different ways to win. Which we didn't do.
We didn't. Yep. So Warney, he's put out the warning for next summer.
Dennett, mini rant time. In the Sydney Morning Herald, Andrew Wu wrote that, so he's talking about the fact that Australia is potentially going to play Ireland in a home test match the summer after next. So he said, if the Ireland fixture is rubber stamped by the two boards, it would result in Australia hosting a test minnow in consecutive summers, giving its reputation abroad a much needed boost. So the other one he's talking about is that the Afghanistan test match this coming summer is looking confirmed. And my point is, well, that's great that we're going to host Ireland, but our reputation surely is worse than that, that we can't improve it by having one extra test match against a so-called minnow, because our reputation is terrible because we only play the sides that we want to play. Now, I'm not talking about the cancellation of South Africa. I think that was the unfortunate but the right thing to do. But just picking on two relationships, that it's been covered before, but it's worth covering again. Bangladesh, 2003... was the last time we hosted Bangladesh in a test match. It was also the first time we hosted Bangladesh in a test match. We've only ever played two test matches against them in this country. Bangladesh has 170 million people. They're the eighth most populous nation in the world. One day, they'll be more powerful than us as far as cricket, and they'll look back and say, we're not going to do you any favours. You didn't do us any. We're not going to do you any. But the other
that's one, the way India feels about Australia now.
Exactly. You can look exactly at that, and we didn't do India many favours in the past either. But the other one next door, I just find this stat amazing. New Zealand, we have played 26 tests in New Zealand. Not in the last few years, not this ever. In the history of Earth, the Australian men's team has only ever played 26 test matches in New Zealand. We've played 25 test matches in England in the last 16 years. We have no test matches scheduled as far as the Future Tours program goes in New Zealand. So that goes another 2 years. So in 2 years' time, we'll be able to look back and say, in the last 13 years, we have played two test matches in New Zealand. Now, we only make money, I think, when England and India come out here. We've got a budding rivalry on our doorstep that we really should be giving love. India, New Zealand, when they came out here, lots of fans came out. They're now the number one test side in the world. I know they haven't done very well in test matches against us, but we don't really give them much of an opportunity. In the 1800s, England hosted minnows 9 times, and that minnow was called Australia.
There's no one else to host.
Yeah, but also in 1800s, they're not negotiating broadcast deals either.
No, no, but I'm saying we'll get to that. But they hosted us 9 times for 24 tests, and we won 4. We were terrible, and yet they kept on inviting us. And as a result, they now have this flourishing rivalry. If we had treated New Zealand better then and had really encouraged them and had lots of series against them, we'd have higher broadcasting rights because it's a ready-made rivalry with all the other sports. And
we like the Bledisloe Cup.
Yeah. Well, good knowledge, Menas.
Very good. Thank you.
Everyone's losing interest in that as well, but sure.
Not in New Zealand, they're not.
Not in New Zealand, no. We're losing interest over here.
Anyway, so it's a bit of a disjointed rant to say, I know it's tough, but we can't just keep on.
We haven't won the Bledisloe Cup for ages, have we?
That's correct. Sorry. Yeah, you did really well.
I wasn't sure the reference.
Yeah. We can't just keep on playing England and India and no one else.
Thoughts, Jaleesa? Do we give our Kiwi neighbours enough love?
I do take Paul's point. I don't think we give our Kiwi neighbours enough love because I would like to see us play our Kiwi neighbours a lot. But when you're looking at these kind of things and how these things are decided, I'm sorry, but unfortunately not a lot of people commercially, it's not attractive to play Bangladesh. It just isn't. Mm. And probably commercially over, you know, selling the rights over there it is. But for our TV networks here, you're just never going to be able to – Cricket Australia's never going to be able to walk in and go, this is this blockbuster summer we've got when you've got, okay, but also can we play India? Can we play England? So I think definitely a lot of it now is commercially driven. But I think there probably is an appetite there for New Zealand a bit more.
Because of the rivalry.
But not even just that, because there's a lot of, crossover between the Kiwis here and we're over there and just the close proximity. I think there's probably a little bit of a rivalry there that hasn't been teased out as much as it probably could be. But I think with some of the other nations, it's just not commercially attractive.
But it will be commercially attractive at some point. And if we're just consistently only short-termist, that's what we did with India. We hosted India so infrequently. We had them out here in 91, 92, didn't get them out again until 99, 2000, and then suddenly realised, oh, geez, there's a lot of money to be made, and we got them out a whole lot more. I know your point. Like, I'm not saying have a 5-test match series against Bangladesh and, you know, the TV rights would be appalling, but we do need to at least squeeze them in for some winter tours or something to at least show them some love so that, A, it's the right thing to do, and B, when they eventually probably do get more powerful, then maybe they'll think more kindly of us.
Yeah, I see your point. I just think you can't really walk into TV execs and go, okay, so we're going to play Bangladesh now. I know that shit now, but in 30 years, you're going to feel like it's...
You're going to thank us.
You're going to thank us. And they go, you're retired. Well, we don't care because we're here now and we want to know what's going
to be but I'm saying, now. Don't worry about that now. Just say, okay, we're playing Bangladesh in July in Darwin and we're not expecting to get much money for it, but it doesn't cost us that much either.
Mm. It does cost networks a lot to cover cricket.
No, don't cover it then. I'm saying if the Australian networks don't want to cover it, I'm saying we need to play Bangladesh more. And if they don't want to cover it, if they think it's not worthy of them covering it, then we've just got to play some test matches with them to give the rivalry some love, to not be the pariahs of the sport internationally.
If you're not covering, though, where's the money coming in for Cricket Australia?
No, but I'm saying it's like the Sheffield Shield, that you lose on that, that you just need to have some test matches against Bangladesh, even if you don't make much money off them, or even if you lose. At the moment, I think you lose every test series we have, except when we play India or England, we lose on all of them.
Yeah, we do.
So we shouldn't play South Africa, we shouldn't play New Zealand, we shouldn't play Pakistan, we shouldn't play Sri Lanka. We should only play England and India if it's going to be down to money. But I'm saying long term, that's a strategy that sort of condenses the sport in an unhealthy way. So I'm saying you don't go crazy and, as I said, have a 5-test series against Bangladesh and try to sell it. You've got to do a little bit more than what we're doing and haven't had them out here for 18 years.
Surely you could sell rights playing Bangladesh here to Bangladesh. If you're saying there's 170 million people,
of course,
you must watch TV.
Yeah.
I think that the what I get on board with Paul is they need to start to, you're right, carve out some time to play teams like this.
Mm.
And it's clear we can't fit them into the summer. That's never going to happen. There's the Big Bash. There's the big international tours. They are not going to block off time in the peak of cricket season to play a smaller nation. But as you say, if they could work out something in winter venues up north, perhaps, where was it, Darwin, Cairns, somewhere like that, make those venues really excited to have the test matches,
mm.
perhaps you could, you know, sort of build up that sort of culture where fans know that every year there's going to be a winter series against a smaller nation and half our players aren't there because they're at the IPL.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm, yeah.
All right, the final headline. Well, history has been made for New South Wales and not quite as bad as being bowled out for 32, but the New South Wales Breakers missed their first ever Women's National Cricket League final. Incredibly, there have been 24 WNCL finals. New South Wales have been in every one until this year. And this year they missed out and they will not be in the final.
Yeah, I mean, what
Victoria v Queensland is the final.
What a tremendous run. 23 years. That's it has to come to an end eventually.
All right, we're going to take a break and then we'll be back with some great questions from the listeners. And then can't let it go. I just want to remind you all that we're launching our Patreon page. So there's a Linktree link in the show notes that will take you to the Patreon, our merchandise, bonus episodes, the whole thing. So have a look in the show notes for that link. We are selling merchandise. It's just not – we haven't sold one T-shirt yet. We haven't sold one T-shirt yet. It's DRS-themed.
You're not meant to mention that. You know, we've sold thousands. Like
you get them before they run out.
I haven't seen a single person today not wearing one of our T-shirts, except for us three.
Oh, my gosh, mine's at home.
You look great in it, Jaleesa.
Oh, thank you.
MS Dhoni rang me yesterday.
We'll come up with some new designs. We're going to be releasing new T-shirts every month. So if you want a DRS...
I've got good design ideas. I think you guys should have come to me.
We still will.
Don't worry, we will after the way the first lot have gone.
Now, I designed the first lot. That's why he's saying this. Now, have you seen the first lot?
I have, yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts on them? Oh, no. We'll have to edit this bit out. What's that, Jaleesa? They're fantastic.
They're very funny, but maybe not wearable.
What you're saying is they have a global audience of one.
They cover the bits you need covered.
Great. All right, on that note, we'll take a break. We're back. It's viewer mail time. So we put out the call today for some questions and Nicholas Riggle has written in a question. Do you want to read this one out, Paul?
Given the amount of rain that traditionally falls in Queensland and New South Wales around this time of year compared to the other states, would you support front-loading home games in those states earlier in the summer to allow the best chance for as many matches to not be impacted by rain? Good question. I had actually always thought that...
Can I just interject here quickly?
I had a 10-minute monologue on rainfall.
But I know, but before I interject, I just want to tell the listeners that Paul's second passion is weather.
But only temperature.
Temperature, not rain?
Do you have the Weather Underground app?
I think I do, yeah.
It's so good. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
I would say...
Weather Underground are not paying me either.
Rainfall is my profession. Temperature is my passion.
Okay.
Because rainfall is when I need to know about rainfall to know whether it's going to be a draw or not in the cricket. But I don't love doing that. Temperature is my true passion. Okay. But anyway, it's a good point from Nicholas because he's actually right, and I didn't realise this, that the rainfall in especially Brisbane in February, March and April is really very much higher than it is a little bit earlier on. So if you played extra Sheffield Shield games in, say, September and October and November in Queensland and maybe in New South Wales and then had the rest of the season in the other states, that would work from a let's minimise as many rain interruptions days as we can. It probably wouldn't work from a whole host of other reasons, but interesting point. I like it.
But the season would normally be over by now. I guess that's worth pointing out that the season is running a good month over what it normally would. Mm. Now, Marcus Williams. Here we go. Mad Manners is back. How about a discussion on putting to bed any talk of changing Test captain? Payne has done a great job all in all. Recent form is solid, and I can't see a definite replacement at this stage for him anyway. And then he's gone on to say that...
No, I want to read you to read that.
You read that. You read that.
Should Steve Smith replace him? Awesome batsman and fantastic cricket talent. But for me, his temperament and display of emotions on the field too often bubble over and perhaps cloud his decisions. The captain has to look calm, in control, brackets even if he isn't, as the whole team feeds off his demeanour and body language. Might sound like harsh criticism, but he is such an emotionally invested cricketer on the field that I think captaincy just doesn't suit him. Only my opinion, of course, but could be a discussion. Cheers. Great podcast, by the way. I never miss it. Oh, thanks, Marcus.
Yeah, thank you, Marcus.
Never miss it. Like 2 weeks ago, I said I wanted to sack Payne, and now he's saying we shouldn't talk about it.
No, okay. Well, first of all, thank you, Marcus. That's some really nice feedback. Unfortunately, I disagree with you.
Okay. But at least you're doing it politely. Menas, every time a listener sends in something nice, you have a go at them.
We lose.
I love Marcus. But
I know, Marcus,
Menas is angry that you haven't committed every podcast to memory.
Payne should be sacked.
Marcus, the way that I like to think about the podcast is you come for Menas, you stay for me and Paul. but when...
I think they come for you and they stay for you.
So I found it really interesting that he's saying that... that Steve Smith is too emotional, because I think that's exactly what we saw Payne as in against India. Like, I thought Payne, the whole team fed off Payne getting agitated and frustrated and letting his whole emotions take over every decision. And just, I think that actually Steve Smith in comparison is quite calm when I think he hasn't been as calm since he hasn't been captain, because he's been allowed to be a little bit
more
emotional.
I don't know if you remember the tour of Sri Lanka a few years ago where he lost his rag. I think that's a legitimate criticism of Smith, but you would hope that getting sacked as captain and bringing the greatest scandal on Australian cricket has changed him a little bit. And if he would be given the captaincy, it would be better than last time.
Yeah. I don't think he should have the captaincy again. Okay. Just because I think you get a shot at it and if...
Yeah, and a lot of people feel that
way.
Yeah, one strike, you're out.
Well, yeah, I don't, and not to punish him, but just I think you've had your time and now it's time for someone else.
Your chance didn't work out.
But I'm not sure that he's got a better temperament. He's got a worse temperament than Payne, because I actually find Payne got way too agitated and way too frustrated, and it was awful to watch. It made me uncomfortable.
And why shouldn't we be talking about replacing him? Whether they do or don't, there are a lot of good options to replace Payne. He did not do a good job as captain against India. He did not do a great job at Headingley. I'm sorry, but you can discuss it, whether he keeps the job or not. But Carey, Inglis, there's legitimate contenders for Payne's position.
I want to hear Marcus come back at us on this, though. I want to hear, like, what he thinks of what we just said.
I'm happy enough with Payne at the moment and for the next couple of years. I probably would...
So you don't like winning? Like, you don't like when a team wins?
Is that what you're saying? Why don't you like Australia, Paul? I don't understand.
Yes, I'm a secret agent for India, actually. I'm happy enough with him for the next couple of years. And beyond that, I probably would prefer Cummins to Smith. But I'm, if Smith ends up getting it back again, it wouldn't be the worst thing.
I'm not, when you say there's a lot of options, I actually don't feel like there is.
Who's the wicketkeeper position?
Oh, I'm talking about. Not the captaincy. Oh,
there's
okay.
A little bit more complicated. I still wouldn't mind Smith being it. I like Cummins. But I just don't, I think we should be talking about it, because Payne has, tactically, he's not great.
I want to see Payne absolutely roll England and go out with a bang, and then we can all look back on this and go, we were so wrong. And
I hope so.
And
I
Marcus
would love
was
it.
Right.
I hope Marcus is right.
And Paul was right.
Payne is in career best form with the bat. He scored, I think, 87 against New South Wales last match. So he is batting better than he's ever batted.
And I think the reason I was wondering why I'm so dispassionate about this, and it's it brings me to Richie Beno's old quote that captaincy is 90% luck and 10% skill. Don't try it without the 10%. I think that I strongly think that the impact of the captaincy is so overrated and overstated.
Yeah, it's true.
But I don't think Payne has the 10%. That's the problem. I think he's got like 7.
You know, one of the things that Beno characterised as the 10% was decisiveness. And he said, if you're someone who's wondering, should I have scrambled eggs or should I have fried eggs? And he's going, yeah. Or if you don't know which lane in the motorway to get on. And I thought straight away, that's me.
That's me as well.
So if your eyes do get sorted
out. I would go for both the eggs.
All right. Next question from Danny Ando. He knows me very well because he wrote, "Is Rakeem Cornwall the greatest all-rounder of all time?" Well, I'm not sure he's the greatest all-rounder of all time, but he did have a Babe Ruth style calling his shot before the latest test match he's playing against Sri Lanka. He told a local reporter before the match to tell the world, "I've come to make a score." And he was dropped to 9 in the batting order, but as we record this, he's 60 not out.
Good on him too.
Nice.
Do you know who the greatest all-rounder in the world is, ever?
You go. Jacques Callis.
Is there stats?
Yep, Don Bradman. Okay. His average of 100 is so good that, it overarches everything and he's the best. So you take Gary Sobers, who people often say, average 57 with the bat. So that's Bradman's 43 better. Gary Sobers' bowling average is 34. Who would you want? A bowler who averages 34 or a batsman who averages 43? I'll take the batsman who averages 43. Bradman's the best all-rounder ever. Thank you.
Smart ass.
Thank you and good night.
All right, Matt Webber. Has Pete Hanscom got his technique in order to return to the Australian test team's middle order? Jaleesa.
Well, I think, first of all, look, I'm not against Hanscom returning, but I think you've always got to remember the mentality of the Australian cricket team that you have to do a lot to lose your spot. Someone has to lose their spot. Who would lose their spot?
Well, I'm not sure about who's going to lose his spot, but I do think that when he goes to Middlesex this winter and plays on English wickets, that'll really sort of test his technique because he did show a bit of a weakness against the moving ball. So I think if he scores a lot of runs for Middlesex this summer in England against the county bowlers, I think then he's a legitimate chance to get back in the team.
He is trending in the right direction. I think I said it a few weeks ago that if he'd need to do something pretty good to impress me again. Average of 38.25. He's about to turn 30. He's had a long career. That's not an amazing number, but averaging 53 this season is very impressive.
Hate the idea.
Look back at his previous years in Australia, 17-18, average 33. Next year, average 36. Next year, average 27. This year, averaging 53. I'd need to see another season or two of that, and then I couldn't care less about his technique.
Season
I think
or
that,
two? He's getting a bit old.
I think you were saying not to be ageist.
Was that me, Craig?
Oh, okay, sorry.
I agree. That's overblown. Because he doesn't bat like everybody else. He's not going to score runs.
Yeah, if he gets the runs, then bring him in.
Steve Smith would never have been picked if that was the...
True.
Yeah.
Final question, a joke here from Benny Hearn. How about a wrap-up of grade cricket from the individual states?
I'm on board.
I'm on board with that, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, I'll start with no.
We had one that came on through my Twitter. Scott Stein said, would love it if you guys can do an all-time best ever T20 Australian team. I think we should flag that.
Yeah, let's do it next
I'm
week.
I'm going to like that right now so I can remember.
We'll do that next week. What was his name?
Scott Stein.
Stein.
Is it? Stein.
Scott Stein. Dale Stein's younger brother. Good to see he's a listener. All right, now let's get on to Can't Let It Go. Jaleesa.
Oh, can I go last, actually?
Yes, Paul.
Okay.
The one bit of cricket news we just can't let go through to the keeper. Here it is.
I thought I was going to have some fun and in a masochistic sort of way and say, well, New South Wales is 32 has got them into the all-time list for lowest first-class scores. But, geez, there's been some low scores. Wow. I mean, it has been going for a quarter of a millennium and they've had 60,000 games, so you'd expect that.
60,000?
I know. Cricket Archive cuts the list off at 29. If you're not 29 or low, you don't.
So South Australia make it, fortunately.
Yes, there have been 158 scores of 29 or lower in that 250 year history. So New South Wales don't make it, but the winning score is by a team called the Bees against England. Bees, as in the letter B, against England at Lord's Old Ground on the 12th of June 1810, and they were all out for 6. Joe Barton saw that his namesake was playing in that game. He saw Jay Barton got a duck, and he was very proud of that. So I'm not sure if there's any relation there. But, Lord's Old Ground, that's before Lord's. And it was the last game ever played at Lord's Old Ground. 2 months later, Thomas Lord wasn't happy with the rent and kicked it in and moved across. And a few years later, the new Lord's Ground was established in 1814. So there you go.
Wow. Doesn't make me feel any better about the 32, I've got to
say. Want me to be modern, and the reason it took a couple of years longer was that cricket was really lost all favour because the Napoleonic Wars were on and people were worried about
that. I thought so. I did think about that. I thought Napoleonic Wars, definitely. That's a first. I don't think they've in the 500 episodes of this podcast, the Napoleonic Awards have never been mentioned. So congratulations on that achievement. All right, my can't let it go is I was listening to our good friends Gideon Hay and Pete Lawler, their podcast, and they had Damien Fleming on, and they were reflecting on the 2001 Indian tour. Now, Jaleesa's not going to add a lot to this discussion, but it was a brilliant tour for the listeners out there that remember it. One of the greatest test tours ever, as close as you can get to the 2005 Ashes in excitement and quality. Would you agree with that, Paul?
Yep, I agree with that. It was the second best test series I've ever seen.
And so
wow.
Gideon Hay said that it's an interesting point because that is a turning point in Australia-India test cricket because since that famous Kolkata partnership between Dravid and Laxman, India are one of the few sides that have a winning record against us. So they've played, since then, they've played 44 tests against us. They've won 20, India, and we've only won 15, and then it's been 11 draws. Going into that Kolkata test, there'd been 58 tests played. Australia had won 29 and just lost 11. But that partnership between Dravid and Laxman not just turned the tide of that test series, but it can be viewed as turning the tide between the test fortunes of the nations.
And you're going to hate me for this, but it's probably going to stay that way. Because I've said it before.
The few people have pointed out that to me, by the way.
1.4 like billion
the
people.
That listen.
Yeah.
Well, Paul's right. Paul's right. You're never going to beat India.
Well, nor you, England. I mean, it's not having to ask in isolation.
Yeah.
It may get to the point where we might look back on these last, in that period since 2001, as the last golden era where we were somewhat competitive against them. I hope that's wrong.
England have a winning record against India in the same period. They've won 16 and just lost 15. All right, Jaleesa.
Yes, I have two.
Great. Make up for all the weeks you don't have
because I'm like either zero or 100,
yes,
you know?
Yes, we know.
Well, first of all, this isn't really a can't let it go, but I just wanted to give a shout out to all the grassroots cricketers who the rain has ruined their finals because it was probably like this weekend.
I think some have been rescheduled for the coming
some,
weekend.
Some, but not all of them have.
I might be commentating on the women's premier cricket final.
Right, okay. Big gig. But not all, because I know Paul Lane Cove Cricket Club, I think they had a few in few different grades and it went on a count back and they...
Who cares?
I care.
I care as well, Menace.
I care as well.
No, yeah, I'm just going to say, but how good would it be if you'd been the minor premiers and you won on a countback?
Oh, no, that's unsatisfying. That's a hollow victory.
No, it's not.
That's a hollow victory.
But you look at the forecast and say, all right, boys, we might have a couple of quiet beers on Friday night because we don't have to worry about playing on Saturday.
Why would you have quiet ones? Just go for the full hog. And they're probably already having
no,
quiet ones.
No, it is disappointing. I know they work all. It's like when you're, and I've been, you build up to those big games.
Exactly.
And
like,
you know, you got your job all week and you look forward to it.
No, because these are people that are, they're giving up every weekend to play cricket.
Yep.
They're not like getting paid. And
of course not.
You know, you give up a lot of your time.
And then it rained out and people losing their houses and animals dying.
Okay, I'm sorry for that. That's sad. You know, no, of course, a lot of people have lost their houses and everything. That's quite sad. But also, I feel sorry for them.
Oh, they've lost the final, Lane Cove.
I'm leaving. This is a walkout.
You almost reached across and punched him then. That would have been,
It's going to happen one day.
That's what the video's for.
That's why we introduced the video. Okay. My other can't let it go is Dhanushka Gunathilaka, Sri Lanka batsman, was in the first ODI against West Indies, was actually out for obstructing the field. And and it's just one of those ones that we don't see a lot of. And watching it back too, so what happened was Kieran Pollard was bowling a short ball and that he went to run and then sort of he called the run and then he went, oh no, hang on, went to go back. And as he's walked back, he stepped on the ball. And
he kind of blocked Pollard from getting to the ball, yeah, but not intentionally.
That's the thing. And so then it went upstairs and they had a look at it and deemed him to be out.
It doesn't have to be intentional, does it?
No, it does have to be intentional.
Okay, so if it does have to be intentional, that was a bad
decision.
No,
I thought it was a bad decision. I'm sure it's meant to be.
Yeah, you're right. It's supposed to be intentional.
I'm sure it's meant to be intentional.
I've got to admit, I don't know.
Okay. I think it's supposed to be intentional.
I'm shameful that I don't know.
My understanding of the rule is that it does need to be intentional. And what actually I think got him was when he walked back, he sort of looked down and then stepped on the ball. But I think his foot was sort of already in motion. So that's what they deemed to be. My understanding is that's what they deemed to be intentional because he looked down and then he stepped on the ball. But I think it was more he went to run back, went to step, and then realised, hang on a second, there might be a ball there, and sort of didn't want to fall over and has stepped on the ball. So I thought it was a pretty tough call, but also one of the sort of ways that we don't really see people get out now.
Yeah, where? Did you see, I was going to say about that one, did you see today as we record this, Kyle Jamieson took a ball, caught and bowled in his follow through, and then he put the ball on the ground as he landed to sort of break his fall.
No, but I didn't see that.
He caught the ball cleanly, but it's given not out because he can't land on the ball.
Mm.
And people go, oh, it should be given out. Even Fox Cricket tweeted, oh, that's disgraceful. And they were like, well, no, like you can't catch the ball and then use it to, you know, land on the ground.
Yeah.
We're going to end today's show with an excerpt from our Shane Watson Patreon interview. So I've started a new show for the Patreon page every month. It's called Menna's Masterclass. I'll be interviewing a special guest. And the first guest is Shane Watson, who played 59 tests, 190 ODIs and 58 T20 internationals. He won 2 World Cups and is the only Australian player to ever captain Australia in all 3 formats and score a century in all 3 formats. So Shane Watson's joining me now. Head to t20stars.com for all his new endeavours, includes his merchandise. He's selling cricket equipment. He's got his podcast there. So head to t20stars.com. Here's Shane Watson. Shane, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have another podcaster in studio.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Just an amazing record. Do you sort of look over your numbers now that you've retired?
Not really. Apart from, I suppose, the games that I play is probably the thing that stands out. And I always do. When I look back now that I've stopped playing altogether, I really do don't take for granted how fortunate I was to be able to have such a long career. It was definitely, I had a lot of injuries and challenges through those periods, through my career, but still, yeah, to be able to have that longevity, I feel very fortunate, there's no question, yeah.
All right, let's go back to the beginning. Now, I know your parents have been a really strong influence in your life. Mm. Your dad was in the Air Force, your mum a teacher at your school, in the admin at your school.
Yep.
It seems like they gave you a really solid grounding that has never really left you. And I can only imagine how important that was as you sort of tried to negotiate your career through, the international cricket calendar.
Mm. Yeah, mum and dad were always, gave me an incredible foundation in my life and the values that they instilled in me and also my environment that I grew up in around Ipswich, growing up in Ipswich as well, was a sporting community in a big way. There was a number of heroes that had come out of Ipswich as well that I aspired to be like. And the support that mum and dad always gave me, I always felt like I had the opportunities. If an opportunity arose with cricket or rugby and school as well, for example, like for them to be able to sacrifice what they had to be able to put me through Ipswich Grammar School at that time is one of the reasons why mum worked at the school as well, because we've got
a discount
on the fees. So, there's the different sacrifices mum and dad made to be able to give me all the opportunities that they possibly could, whether it was through time, like with my dad to be able to sort of drive me, especially to and from cricket, and then be involved in Ipswich Junior Cricket up until then I moved on, but dad still stayed there coaching Ipswich Junior Cricket until I was in my 20s as well. So the time that they spent, but also then the sacrifice they made for me to have the best opportunities I possibly could. And that really gave me a super solid foundation for my life. And then, negotiating a very different world of international cricket. Yeah. If I didn't have that foundation, I could have easily sort of gone up and down a lot more than what I did. And,
did you ever get pulled away from your moral compass, like, at any time?
No, not really. Like, there's definitely things out there that can challenge that. Mm. But, no, I was just so I was so determined to be the best cricketer that I could be, and that's how it would have been outside of my study, because that was like super important through high school. But outside of that, it was always, I just wanted to be the best cricketer I could be, and whatever sacrifice I had to make, that didn't worry me whatsoever. I just wanted to give myself the best chance of being the best cricketer I could be. So, yeah, there's always temptations out there, but my priority was always my cricket, and sticking strong to what my morals always were. So that was, I've always found that pretty easy.
So Test debut 2005 against Pakistan at the SCG. I was fortunate enough to be at every day of that Test match. So I remember it very well. Mm. And I'm curious, how were you given the news that finally you were going to get the baggy green? Because you've been in and around the squad, you played a lot of limited overs cricket up until then. Who told you that you were going to be in the 11, and what was that moment like?
Yeah, so it was a guy who was head of operations at Cricket Australia called Michael Brown, who was there for quite a long period of time. He rang me while I was actually on holiday up at Hamilton Island, thinking I was going to have some time off over Christmas and New Year, and just rang and said, "You're in the 12 for the Sydney Test match, and the likelihood is that you're going to most probably play." And just that whole time was just because my dream was always to wear the baggy green, to be able to play a Test match, to be able to get that news, just something that I always worked so hard for and just like dreamed about it for such a long period of time. And then when that realization comes around, and I got on the field and played my first Test match, then the realization that now it's actually really started. Now it's time to be able to, okay, what do I have to do to be able to play well, not just get the baggy green, but be able to play well and try and perform with the baggy green on my head. And then that's the next step after, which is the most challenging, because there's more eyes on you, there's more pressure on you, there's a lot more expectation around it as well. So that's when it really began. But that first Test match, that's why Sydney also holds such a special part in my heart.
One thing that's just incredible about your career is you finished on top. So IPL final 2018, just a lazy 117 off 57 balls, including 8 sixes when Chennai beat the Sunrisers. It's amazing that you just were able to sustain your high level right to the end, even IPL 13. What kept your skills up, do you think, in those last few years when, it's easy for a player to sort of fade out?
Yeah.
Never happened for you.
Two things, I suppose. Two things. One was I was trying to prove a couple of things to myself as a starting point. One was the theory around it as a batsman alone, but cricket in general, the older you get, towards the back end, you should really taper off. And my thought was, you should actually be more skilled because you've had more skill development. As long as physically you're not actually like you haven't slowed down, and bowling wise that was for me, but batting wise, if I'm able to sort of work on my reflexes, unless I've got like a physical sort of injury that's stopping me moving quickly, then surely my skills should actually be better than they've ever been in theory of skill development. And the other one was around, also my experience of playing in different conditions, different bowlers, trying to tap into that. So that was one aspect. The other one was around the mental skills. And that's why by educating myself, end of 2015, like a deep understanding of the mental skills from a guru mental skills coach from the US that I got introduced to, that was also, again, proving the point around, okay, if I can get out of my own way from a mental skills point of view, surely I've still got a lot of good cricket in front of me. And these are one of the reasons why it kept me going is to go, let me try and prove that theory instead of it just sort of being a theory that I might finish and then go, maybe I could have if I really worked on my mental skills. So that was the thing that I really, really worked on. And there's no question being able to play only T20 cricket meant that it was just refining that skill, and especially batting wise, it was just refining that skill, even in club cricket. playing here in for the Sutherland Sharks. I'll be playing a 2-day game, and I'm practicing after the first sort of 10 to 12 balls. I'm practicing a T20 batting. So these poor guys who rocked up on the weekend thinking they just hit a length, and I was coming and taking them on. But that was like, so being able to really concentrate my just practicing one skill as well, instead of sort of being test cricket one days and T20s and trying to just find a way to maneuver through those different format changes. It was just all my skill was on that. So those were the things, I suppose, that kept me really going, to be able to prove that if you can get out of your own way from a mental skills point of view, then you got a chance of being able to access all the skills you got and still have some really good innings.
You know, if all that wasn't enough, you've started your own range of cricket gear. Now, I heard you speaking to Pete Lawler and Gideon Hay on their podcast. So I know that, you know, part of your motivation was to make gear that was sort of inexpensive and affordable.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's very noble. I've got an idea for you. So what about pads that when the ball hit them, left a little mark? So say you were sort of having problems with DRS, you could look down and go, oh, it's hit the outside of the pad. So I might go upstairs with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think?
It'd be good to know. It might have probably helped me as well. So at least I could have like lined it up a little bit better.
The DRS breaker by Watto.
Yeah, I know, exactly. That could be, yeah, I might have to talk to a manufacturer, see if I can get that on.
So seriously, though, you've started your brand of Shane Watson gear, T20 All-Stars. So what's sort of the theory behind it? What's going to make your stuff a bit different to what's around?
Yeah, well, I suppose the starting point is just around the design. So everything that I'm doing with my gear is all around what I know like works, and the design and the extra protection or the shape of the bat, for example. It's just everything that I suppose the knowledge that I've gained about, because I was so particular about
cricket all is my art. Gear. Cricket is art. Absolutely.
So as a starting point, that's the reason why I was like, I reckon I can design across like from the entry level range all the way up to the top of the range, all the features in that are so important to be able to make sure these people are using the best gear that they can for whatever price range that they're in. So it's fueling my gear. I've been a gear tragic since I was a young kid. Mm. So it's fueling that. But the other thing is just around making the gear affordable. So for the different sort of the ranges that the range that I've got right now, but the ranges that I will have, just making it affordable for people if they want to get like a mid-range products. It's what the price it should be. So that's why the T20 Stars, it's all online. It's cutting out the middleman, so it's just going directly from wholesale directly to the consumer. So the products are compared to the other brands for that price, for that quality of product, it's much more affordable.
The online bit gets me because I've got two kids. You're busy every weekend, running around. You know, sometimes you just want to be able to click on, order something and it arrives, not have to go to a cricket centre somewhere and takes the whole day. So, you know, are you finding has it been a success so far?
Look, absolutely. It's because it's a different way of buying things though, like for cricketers in general, especially people in around the city, they're used to going to Great Chapel Cricket Centre or Kings Grove and going and, you know, picking the gear out. So in that regard, it's going to take a little bit of time for people to sort of change their buying habits for cricket gear. But once they realise, people realise that the quality, and once they know the sizing and everything, and also COVID sort of sped up the online sort of purchasing habits anyway.
Absolutely.
So in that regard, it's sort of a perfect time to be able to launch it as well. But that's all part of, you know, the online e-commerce sort of space now. It's a way to be able to make things a better price point for the exact same quality of gear just because you're only online.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, there's a link to T20 Stars in the show notes. Go and have a look. Shane Watson, entrepreneur, podcaster, former cricket star. What's next?
Hopefully successful, very successful podcaster, entrepreneur in the next phase. I suppose that's how I'm built, is to be able to just try and get the best out of myself in whatever I do. So I feel so the next phase is going to be, you know, trying to push the limits on how good I can be, whether it's with my family being the best dad that I can be and best husband, but also this next phase of my life to be able to try and, you know, really build a successful business as well.
Well, great stuff there with Shane Watson. You can hear the whole interview on our Patreon page. Head to the link in the show notes. Jaleesa, thanks so much for coming in this week.
My pleasure.
Have a good week.
Thank you. You too.
Enjoy all the cricket. There's a lot happening in the cricket world, so enjoy.
No rain.
No rain, we hope, for
Rain's
Lane Cove.
Rain's going
away. Yeah. Paul, have a great week.
For Lane Cove.
You too, guys. Speak to you next week.
Thanks, listeners. Bye-bye.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.